All right, welcome to presentation. So the father took his daughter fishing. And they got to the lake there, and they were walking out on the dock, and this little girl was holding her fishing pole, and she said, "Daddy, I want a hook on my line." So her daddy tied a nice, brand new, shiny hook on her line, and she was looking at this thing. "This hook is going to catch so many fish. This is a nice, shiny hook. I really like this hook, and I'm sure it will catch a fish." And her daddy said, "Well, you can try. You can try." It's wise enough to let her try. So she casts her hook off this other side of the dock, and the dad puts a worm on his and throws it off the opposite side. And the young girl is sitting there trying to catch a fish and getting nothing. And her father is there reeling in one after another. She says, "Dad, you have the lucky pole." And the dad says, No. "What we need you to do is to put a worm on your fishing line." "A worm? Dad, what did the worm do wrong? Doesn't God love worms too?" The dad says, No. And she says, "Who would want to eat a worm anyway?" Her dad says, "It's a fish." "Ew, Dad, please, no." But she went ahead and managed, she cried a little bit and stuck a worm on there, and she caught some fish. And she learned a very valuable lesson that day, and that is that to catch fish, you must put something on your hook that is appealing to the fish, not appealing to you. What is the art, or what is the purpose of presentation? When someone is presenting something, what are they trying to do? Why do books have nice covers like this? Why do they put pictures on raisins? What's the point? Yes?
Bait a person.
They're trying to sell something. If you don't believe me, why do cars have shiny paint jobs? They don't need them, right? The car would work just as well if it had a dull paint job. They're trying to sell cars, all right? What are we trying to sell as teachers? We're trying to sell truth. That's what we're trying to sell. Why do stores and restaurants focus on making their items appealing? Because they want to
sell food.
They want to sell something. We're going to explore the three steps that make a good presentation. Our goal today is to identify and discuss those three steps that you will use in catching students. Jesus said, "I will make you fishers of men." Today, I'm going to tell you I want to make you fishers of students. I want you to catch them. The very first thing is the bait. We need to bait our students. This is the introduction. It's the first thing that happens when your students show up at the class table. And the goal of the introduction is to get their attention. Right? The goal of my introduction, telling you a story about a father and daughter, was to get your attention. I hope it worked. All right? It's my job. Get your attention. The second part of a presentation is the explanation. Let me back up just a minute here. The bait, or the part where we get their attention, is like the shiny paint job on a car. Right? I mentioned that already. It's what catches your eye as you're driving by the road. You weren't really thinking about buying a car, but you see that one and bam, that's a pretty nice car. Right? The bite in a class table situation, it is your explanation. And the goal of the explanation is to keep the student's attention. You got it with your introduction. Trust me, that doesn't mean you still have it 30 seconds later. Right? You have to keep their attention. This is when a car salesman walks out there, he sees you eyeballing a brand new car, and he says, "Here are the keys, take it for a test drive. Experience it, feel what it's like." And he tells you this thing has induced torque, about 80 pounders, and it has dual turbo blinker fluid and whatever, and so on. And you really need this thing. It will help you be a smarter person in life. You will be so much more productive, and so on. That's what the bite or our explanation is, to keep the student's attention. The catch, or this is the application. This is when the students are actually able to start working with what you've given them. This is when they can come up to the board and do a problem. All right? This is the application of what you're saying. This is when you are no longer, you've gotten their attention, You've kept their attention. Now you're directing it in the direction you want it to go. This is like when you're at the car dealership and you drive out with a brand new car. Right? You're applying. This thing caught your attention. You took it for a test drive. You liked it. The salesman convinced you that it's a good thing. And now you have a new car. And you can go forth and do whatever you do with brand new cars. I don't know, because I've never done that. Our takeaway for today is that the teacher is responsible to cause the students to learn. The teacher is responsible to cause the student to learn. For a criminal to get a reduced sentence, he must own his crime. If you show up in a courtroom for shoplifting and you say, the store was overpriced. I couldn't afford it. That's why I took it. Do you think that they're going to give you a shorter prison sentence for that? No. But if you show up and you say, I'm sorry, I was hungry, and those sugar-coated Twizzlers are just, too much for me, they'll probably deal with you. You have to own your crime. Teaching is not a crime, by the way. A quote, I forget what I was taught. I only remember what I learned. Written by a man named Patrick White. A statement that I've boiled down. If they aren't learning, we aren't teaching. That's an awful statement to say, but it's the truth. To teach, the teacher must cause the students to learn. To teach, the teacher is responsible if the student is not learning. If your student is there saying, I don't understand, it is not their fault. It's your fault. Therefore, the teacher has not only the ability, but also the responsibility to change the subject, improve the style, and inspire the speaker to equip the student. Now, saying that if they aren't learning, you aren't teaching, well, that is true. The vast majority of students will take 3 steps forward and 2 steps backward. And even the master teacher, Jesus Christ himself, had a student who did not learn. Right? It does happen. However, the point of this topic is that it is your responsibility to try to make that happen. My statement that if they aren't learning, you aren't teaching is similar to the statement that paper always burns. Is that always true? Underwater it doesn't, do you? To teach, the teacher must not only present new concepts and processes, but also change the way the students think and the way they respond to life. To teach is to improve the life of the one being taught. To teach is to cause the student to recreate in their own understanding a new idea or truth. To teach is to cause the student to apply their knowledge and then apply it some more. How do we get a student to apply a new concept? First, we need to get the student's attention. Number one, the bait, or your introduction. We're going to use a story that took place in Jesus' ministry here on earth as an overarching example for this presentation. This story is the story of Jesus and the woman at the well. I love this story because it has such a nurturing teacher-student relationship that there are so many things. We can't learn everything that could be learned from that story in this little part here. A there, it must appeal to your group. Once again, think about that fish. If you want to catch fish, you have to have a bait that appeals to the fish that you're trying to catch. You have to get their attention. Number one there, sell yourself. Jesus did this. That woman came along, she came to the well, and Jesus asked, give me to drink. He asked for water, which was an extremely unusual thing for a Jew to do to a Samaritan. So she got his attention. He got her attention. Teachers, this has already been mentioned a little bit, dress for success. If you're teaching lower grades, dress in bright colors. Young children like bright colored things. For upper grades, you should probably be wearing darker colors because they make you look more convincing, I hope. Make eye contact with your students. Approximately 2 seconds per person. Otherwise, the person that you are looking at starts to feel like they are being singled out and they might even turn red. And that's not what we're trying to accomplish here. Okay? Move. Walk around in front of your students. Gesture. Get their attention. Point at things. Some of you might have heard the statement that on your first year of teaching, don't smile before Thanksgiving. Forget it. You should meet your students at the front door with a big smile on your face the first day of school. Right? Smile. And because I told you to do that, for me to be teaching, right, I have to get you to apply what I just said. So I'm going to ask the ladies in the back row to stand up. Everyone else turn around. They're all going to smile. Nice big smile for me. All you got to do is stand up and smile. All right? First day of school. Welcome to school. Here we go. Good job. You can sit back down. Invite. Use welcoming body language. You should practice. Welcoming body language is actually typically involves moving your hand and your arm away from your body. There's something interesting about playing people that I have noticed, and that is that many of them will try to talk and gesture with their elbows stuck to their sides. And they do things like... With your students, you look much more relaxed. You look far more welcoming if you extend your arms away from your body. All right. So I'm going to have these young men in the front stand up, turn around, look at everyone and smile, and just extend your right arms. Try not to hit anyone in the process. First day of school, you're welcome in. Good job. You may sit back down. Reassure your students. Teachers, you should notice that in the story of Jesus and the woman at the well, Jesus' tone with that woman was very reassuring. Yes, he said some extremely hard things to her. Why was it successful? Why was she willing to listen to what Jesus said? It's because of the tone. It was because of his relationship to her. Start at your students' ability level. So, for example, if you're teaching fourth graders and they aren't getting something, back up. See, what do you understand? Where are you? They'll tell you, I can't get this lesson. Well, what part of you don't? What part of it didn't you get? How far did you get? Did you get the lesson before this? If not, then you have to go back and start where they were. Number two, sell your subject. Jesus started with water. Why did that woman come to the well in the first place? She wanted water. And so she comes and Jesus says, give me to drink. We start talking about water. She was already thirsty. Use things that are happening in your students' lives whenever you have a chance. Stir curiosity. Jesus was sitting there at the well and he asked her for a drink, but she said, you don't even have a jug. Have any of you wondered about the stuff on the board? I hope so. Okay, the point of it being up there is to get your curiosity stirred. I wanted that to happen. All right. So, for example, how many people went fishing with me? Well, let's start throwing commas in there, because without commas, this is one horribly long name. So where do there need to be commas? Anybody?
After Billy.
After Billy. Keep going.
After Joe.
Joe.
After Jim.
Jim.
After Bob.
Bob.
No, not after Bob. Or is it? I didn't think Bing was a name.
You didn't think Bing was a name? That's okay. Somebody else help him out. Let's keep going here.
After Bing.
After Bing.
After Rose.
After John.
After
Peachy.
After Peachy. And after Joe. You all are really close to right, but you have to remember that just like Joe Miller, I was born in Missouri, and Billy Joe Jim Bob is one person. And I don't know if you knew this, but Jonathan Miller's name, the fellow who got devotion this morning, his nickname is Bing. His wife's name is Rose, and being this is a plain community, you know, when we talk about her, and there's another Rose in the community too, well, she's Bing Rose. Okay, and then we had more than one John, so one of them is John Allen, actually. And we have a Joe who delivers peaches to Pennsylvania, and so they call him Peachy Joe. Where do we need a comma in this sentence? This might be a little bit contested in this room, but...
After woman.
You are a very kind gentleman. Ladies, this is a nice guy. You might want to get to know him. But a woman. Without her, man is nothing. If we happen to move that one down here, it ends up the opposite way. Okay? So we'll leave it over here. Because my wife is in the room, too. All right. What about this one? Let's eat, Grandma. After eat, there should be a comma. Very good. All right. Putting a problem up on the board prior to class time can do that very thing. Stir the curiosity of the students. Get their attention onto what's happening before you even start talking. Use the board. Does anyone know what these little circles are? See, my friend Rico lives in the Philippines, and it floods a lot in the Philippines. He wants to build a house. And so he needs to get poles to put down into the ground to build his house up on. And he's going to put 4 poles on the one side and 3 on the other. How many poles does he need? So we're drawing pictures. And this hopefully can show you that a sketch doesn't need to be very highly detailed for your students to be able to identify that those are the posts for Rico's house, right? And now we can do some calculations and so on. Use objects. So I don't know if anybody's wondering what I'm going to do with an orange. I am planning to do something with it, but we'll do that later. Right. And use stories, sometimes without ending them. For example, one time when I was young, I drove a fertilizer truck that weighed about 20 tons, and I came to the top of this huge hill with a T-junction at the bottom and a big woods on the other side. And at the top of the hill, I tapped my brakes, and the brake shock pedal went all the way to the floor. Now, does anybody know what this picture is? Remember my friend Rico? That's him. How about this picture? One happy whale. There. Use pictures. Your students love pictures. Students are very, very forgiving. They may think something, you're drawing something different than from what you are, but use pictures. Use misquotes. Students love connecting the teacher whenever they get a chance. When a teacher makes a mistake, they like to connect them.
Correct.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. For example, when you're talking about measures and so on, ladies say that, you know, the other day we were baking and I was making cookies and I put in 2 cups of salt and then two watts of salt. One of your students assured me, it wasn't 2 cups of salt, it was 2
teaspoons
maybe. Hopefully, not much more than that. Use unpredictability. Heads down, thumbs up, no peeking allowed. I said what I meant. Heads down, thumbs up. Eyes closed, no peeking. Please, everybody, no peeking. What is it, capital of Texas?
Austin.
Capital of Vermont.
What?
Capital of Washington, D.C. There isn't one. Heads up, 7 up. I hope you all know what to do with this. Students love these kinds of things, right?
All right.
You are allowed to eat those while I talk, by the way. There we go. All right. Does anyone know what this is? Mountain Dew. Thank you. Does anyone know what these are?
Raisins.
All right, I need a very brave soul. Any volunteers? Jim, private, thank you. All right, we have a very brave young man here who is going to take some raisins and drop them in the Mountain Dew. All right, so go ahead and grab some raisins and drop them into the Mountain Dew. Yeah. Very good. You can sit back down. Thank you for being willing to do that. Use sizzle. Things that really are only there to keep the students' attention because they're so hard to explain and so on. I don't know if some of you might have seen the drinking bird. I got one of those last year and my students love it. Interesting little gizmos and so on. What was the takeaway for today? The teacher is responsible. Thank you. Very good. Build the need. You need to make what you're saying important to your students. Jesus did this. This lady was already thirsty. And so he said, you know what? If you would get water from me, I would give you living water so that you would never be thirsty again. And she said, I want some of that. Yeah. In teaching science and history, give examples of why it's important to know some of these things. Display the value of what you're talking about. For example, if you have a student who insists on counting on their fingers every time they're doing things, ask them what they would do if they were carrying two grocery bags. Then what are you going to do? You know, they start thinking. Maybe we do have to quit counting on our fingers. Describe the need. And speaking about science, my students had a science lesson one year when we shampooed the rug in the classroom and then moved our nice metal desks in and set them on top of the freshly shampooed rug. And does anyone know what happened? What happens when you put metal things on wet things?
Rusted.
It rusted. Our nice clean rug had rust spots all over it, and we got to scrub them for the rest of the school year. Good science lesson right there. Or, I don't know how many of you have ever lived somewhere where it was very, very cold, and someone dared you to stick your tongue on a frosty piece of metal. Bad idea, right? Direct students to watch or listen for things. For example, some of you weren't here when I mentioned that there are meteor showers coming up in the very near future. Should be peaking on August the 12th. Or you could try to count how many more times in this topic I use the word use. All right? You can tell your students to do things like that. Sell your introduction. Tell your students what the important thing is, and then have them practice repeating it back to you. We're going to have not the back bench, but the next one stand up and recite our takeaway for today. The teacher is responsible to cause the student to learn. Please do that for us. All together.
The teacher is responsible to cause the student to learn.
They even smiled when they did it. Good job. You want me to sit back down? All right. Memorize your first few lines. You should be making eye contact with your students as they come up to the table, because in most situations, a speaker has only a few seconds to get the attention of their audience before the audience is distracted. And that is especially true with children. If they come up to the table and you're still there paging through your teacher's guide, they're lost. You're going to have a hard time catching them. So one of the easiest things to do is have a review question ready for them. As they're up there shuffling their books in, sitting down, ask them, how many pounds are in a ton? It doesn't have to be something earth-shattering. But be ready. Get their attention right away. And while you are talking, monitor your students' focus. Command their attention versus demanding their attention. Rather than saying, you need to be paying attention, do something so interesting that he's afraid he's going to miss out. And then they want to pay attention. And so on. Make it personal. For example, how many of you can quickly do this problem in your head? I should be seeing lots of hands waving around. You all went to school, right? It's this very simple problem. All you do is change the percent to a fraction, and you think 3/4 of 32. What is 1/4 of 32? 8 times 3 is 24. There we go. How do we solve this problem? 1 plus 3 is 2? Well, students, the only way to make that true is actually to add 2 2's. See? You can go like this. Now that is true. We're off to a good start on fractions. We've convinced you that there is a way to make 1 plus 3 equal 2. Right. And so, I'll go home and tell my mom, hey, teacher said 1 plus 3 is 2 today. And you'll get a phone call from their parents. It must be presented until it is bitten. And I will warn you that every student is different. Not any one of your classes will be the same as anyone else's. There are basically four different types of learners. There are learners who like to do things. This is like someone who, when they get by a new grill, they go out there and they just start putting things together right away. This is the student who shows up for class, they have half of the lesson done and it's all wrong. All right? They just wanted to do something. So we have numbers and things and we just start doing stuff with it. And so there are students who love to talk about the lesson. They come up to the class table. They are the ones who have questions. And whenever you ask a question, their hand is always raised. They are ready, and they want to converse about everything. They would like to talk. This is like the person who is putting the grill together, and the whole time he's talking to himself or to someone else. Yeah, I think this bolt goes right here, and so on. You know, they just have to be talking about things. There are students who like pictures. They want you to be drawing things. And their papers will come in with these fancy letters at the top of the page, and their name will have a smiley face in it, and whatever. They are very visual. Pick up on those things. Those students need you to draw pictures to keep their attention so they can understand the lesson. And then there are students who just love to read. This is like the person who, when they get the grill, they open up the instruction manual, and they just love to read the directions from top to bottom. And once they're all done reading the directions, bam, that grill goes together fast. All right, your picture person would have opened it up, looked at the pictures to see how to put the grill together. Use lecture. This is something you will have to do on some level, which is doing exactly what I'm doing right now, standing up and lecturing. For example, which of the sentences that I wrote on the board has a direct object? None of them. All right? None of them has a direct object. And so we have you wondering, what is a sentence with a direct object? And so on. So for the sake of that question, I don't want to leave you hanging. Here is a sentence with a direct object. And this is one that students can relate to. They're used to this kind of thing. It happens all the time at their place. Use discussion, interaction. Some people just feed off of this. For example, how many of you think chocolate is better than peanut butter? Raise of hands. Okay, that's pretty good. Use visual aids, posters. Use gravel, if that's what it takes. Use the students' five senses. They have more than just their ears and their eyes. We tend to depend only on those two. But fractions actually taste like Kit Kats and, for those of you who were here yesterday, bananas. All right, this is what fractions taste like. They even have a smell, right? And so on. They're not just something that we hear and we look and so on. Use your imagination. You're all creative people. You can have students pretend something. So I will have, Michael, Kurt, and Chad, go ahead and step on up here. We'll just briefly pretend something. Stand with your back to the wall right here. All right, so Michael, we're talking about direct obvious again. You're Tom, you're Hit, you're Dan. Go ahead, Tom, you can hit Dan. Attaboy. All right, you may sit back down. Now, Dan knows what it's like to be a direct object. Something happens to the direct object. Your students will get that kind of thing. You all may sit back down. Thank you for helping. Tell a story or change the way things sound. For example, in this sentence, we call Hit the what of the sentence? Or a pretty cat, right? That's a pretty cat right there. All right, keep going here. The bite and the explanation. Jesus revealed that what he was talking about was actually something spiritual. And so we reveal what's really going on here. This sentence structure is the most powerful sentence structure to use in both writing and speaking. This is called an active sentence, can you tell? It's got power and so on. Something is really going on there. It must tie to as many known facts as possible. And this is going to come back to learning to know your students so that you know what's familiar with them. Keep their attention by tying it to what's in their life. Wayne, did you grow up on a farm? Cabinet shop, is that right? So if I was talking to Wayne, I would mention, if you have an oak board and so on, we can go on with that. Use your students. Use their own names in talking, in making a story. Ivan is riding his bicycle down the hill, and there's a big truck coming behind him, and it blows its horn. And now Ivan's totally involved here. Use objects. I'm running out of time, so I won't get to do this. But does anyone have a clue why I have an orange up here? What does it have to do with anything on the board?
Fraction.
Fraction? We could do that. Yeah, we could use it for the fraction. That bell was a mistake. I thought it was. Thank you. Whoa! All right. So we do get to do this. This orange actually has a lot to do with that formula. 4 pi times radius squared. Now, if I take the orange and cut it down the center, we have 2 circles, right? Okay. The area for the formula of a circle is pi times radius squared. So if you cut 4 pieces of paper that would cover these circles, it would cover the outside of the orange. And that is how you find the surface area of a sphere, right? Piece of cake. And it's very simple, and it's a wonderful way to keep your students' attention at the class table when oranges are cheap. I think that one cost me 90-some cents. No, 60-some cents. Nice, cheap little orange. All right. Use figurative speech. That's item number 6 there. When someone wants to know what about something they don't know about, they ask, what is it like? Children will walk up to you and say, what is a giraffe like? Well, it's like a horse with a really long neck and so on. We do that. That is the way children actually even speak to one another. Go ahead and use that. Use figurative speech with your students. Use examples and make them realistic. For example, Justin is working at $15 an hour and he's trying to save up for a $20,000 brand new car. How many hours does Justin have to work to earn his car? Realistic numbers. Students can start identifying with what's happening. Item B, must be reeled in. We give students an idea and they may run with it in all kinds of bunny trails. We usually have to try to limit it to what is happening. For example, when the woman at the well wanted her, she said, give me this water. Jesus said, oh, sure, go get your husband. Uh-oh. Uno problemo. There's 5 of them. She had to face the facts of what was happening there. I had a friend whose child was very mechanically inclined. If you gave him a screwdriver and a ratchet, he could dismantle a lawnmower in one afternoon. And he did. This might be like for you ladies if you would happen to give a 3-year-old a seam ripper and turn them loose in a closet full of dresses. You can imagine what might happen. You have to show them, no. What we use this for, it's useful. Yes, seam rippers are useful, but there's only certain places we do that. And so on. Demonstrate the process. For example, if we are talking about a fraction problem, we can demonstrate what we do if we're trying to add 3/4 plus 2/3. First, we have to change them into like fractions. And so we demonstrate that we're changing both of those into 12s, and then the students start asking, how in the world did you get 12s over there? And so on. You're demonstrating what's happening, and eventually then we want to get to the point that you let them do it. You need to show your students what to do, how to do it. The thing you don't want to tell them too soon is why. All right? You're actually better off showing the students that this is how we do this and letting them make the connection to why. And that gets into one of the 7 laws of teaching. I won't get too much into that, but it's just a simple fact that we don't do anything for your students that they can do for themselves. Okay? Let them figure out the whys. Lead your students. Have problems for your students to attempt or discuss. Involve your students. All right, so we need to involve you all again. I think we'll have the first row of ladies sitting on chairs right there. Go ahead and stand up and recite our takeaway for today. The teacher is responsible to cause the student to learn. You can stand up again.
The teacher is responsible to cause the student to learn.
Good job. You may sit back down. Ask questions. For example, why is there Braille on a drive-up ATM? Master the irreducible minimum. If you can, boil everything down to as small a chunk as you can. Brother Steve has been talking about that for today's presentation. The point of presentation, we could boil it into 2 words. Those 2 words. Or cause learning. That is your job as a teacher. It is not to do wonderful things in your classroom. It is to make your students do wonderful things in your classroom. Make your presentation bite-sized. Teachers, you need to be aware that your students' attention spans are approximately 1 minute per year of age. So, for example, a first grader that shows up in your classroom will have an onboard attention span of approximately 7 minutes. All right. Yes, we can extend this, but that's how they come packaged from the factory. All right. And you have to work on that. That is why you need to give them a new task about every 7 to 10 minutes. All right. As they get older, we want to stretch that out. We would not want a 13-year-old eighth grader to have a 13-minute attention span, right? We want them to be closer to a 40 or 45 minute. But they don't come naturally that way. You have to work to get that. And if the students you are working with only have a 10-minute attention span, then keep class time down to 10 minutes. That means you might have to have them come up to the table and learn the first part of the lesson. Go back to their desk. Do it. Those are 2 10-minute sections. Come back up again. That means you're working more. I know. Because I've had to do that. Right? But it's what you have to do to teach. And the point is not for you to have a good time. It is to cause learning. Right? Limit your main points to 3 or fewer. Right? Think about 1 Corinthians 13 with me for a little bit. How many verses start with, do I speak with, or do I do? There's three. At the end, he says, and now abideth these 3, faith, hope, charity. and the greatest of these is charity and so on. Paul understood this very fact, that speaking in threes, teaching in threes, has a lot of power. Give a takeaway. Tell your students the only thing you have to know for today is that nouns name. Can you remember that? Can you all say that?
Nouns name.
How easy is that? Anybody can learn about nouns, right? And for example, if we shorten my takeaway for today to these two words, is that easier to remember? Rather than the teacher is responsible to cause the student to learn, we can just say,
cause learning.
There you go. Must be netted or grasped. For example, when you're teaching compound interest, that's a difficult concept. But if you start talking about credit cards, and you tell your students, now what happens here is that the credit card company charges you interest in May, and then in June they charge you interest on the interest they charge you in May, and in July they charge you interest on the interest that they charge you in May and June. They do what? This is what this lesson's about, okay? Here's where we're going with this thing. Teach the status to satisfy the student's need. In the woman at the well's situation, Jesus supplied her need. She went back into that town and said, there was a man out there who talked to me and told me all about myself. He filled a void in my heart that I knew was there. Teach until the lights come on, until that student is struck with the idea. And teach until your student is working the concept. How many of you think you could recite the takeaway for today? Okay, I'm not done yet then. All right, we'll have these ladies on the first row of chairs right here. Go ahead and stand up and recite our takeaway, which is that the teacher is responsible to cause the student to learn.
Let the teacher is responsible to cause the student to learn.
Let the teacher is responsible to cause the student to learn.
Thank you, very good. Item 3, the catch, the application. We are equipping these students for service. We want to change their current set of talents, their abilities. Jesus inspired change in this woman. In Samaria, of all places, that was one of the first places, aside from Jerusalem, that received God's word after Jesus rose from the dead. In fact, we have a story in the book of Acts about Peter going up there with some other apostles. Why did that happen? I think it was because that woman changed her life. She went back into that town, and those people believed in Jesus. In fact, she was so excited about what she was doing, she left her water pot. I love that part of the story. She came there to get a drink, and she totally forgot about getting a drink, and she was racing back in there. Guess what happened to me? If your students are really, truly struck with a good idea, they actually will act like that. I don't know how many of mine have left things at the class table, so maybe that's just because they're forgetful. It must be practiced. Balance the application part of your class periods with the information or the part where you're talking. It should be about half and half. And Conrad talked about teachers needing to have 30 hours in a day. Often, what I do with this is have problems on the board, and I will have a class come up. And once I've told them how to do those problems, I let them start working on that, and I start the next class. Just keep going. Whatever you do, the students need to be working the concept before you can consider yourself to have taught them anything. For example, if you're teaching first grade and you're trying to teach the A sound, if the student can't find an A sound on the page, then something's wrong probably. And you'd probably need to get back into teaching mode. Working equals learning. Repetition equals learning. But even more so, applying equals learning. When your students are applying what you've taught them, that's learning. And the more realistic the application, the better. And the more it applies to your students' lives, the better. For example, Wayne, if you were going to teach someone how to build a cabinet door, Would you start with how to spray the finish line? See, he's with me because we're talking about something he's familiar with and so on. He knows, no, that's not where you start. We have to start somewhere else. We can work with that. Must be corrected is item B. Jesus corrected very gently. When he said, go get your husband, the woman said, I don't have a husband. Jesus said, that's right. That's right. You had five. It's kind of like a student who comes to the class the next day and says, yeah, I got it yesterday. And she says, no, you got a five. That's not necessarily the best thing to happen. Someone mentioned, I think it was Brother Joseph, going into Lowe's and saying, good. And the person on the other side of the counter saying, I'm doing well. Students need correction. It's part of teaching. It's part of presenting. Give constructive criticism charitably. Jesus did. He did what was best for that lady. He said that you all worship here on this mountain. The Jews think they should be worshiping on the mount in Jerusalem. But God wants people to worship Him in spirit and in truth. Jesus was getting right to the heart of what was going on there. Allow your students to struggle. They raise their hand. I don't understand what's going on here. Why not? What is wrong? What did you miss? Struggling is part of learning. Use challenge. Sometimes challenge your students. How many times can you wash the dishes between now and Monday morning on a Friday? Try that with your students and see what your moms think about it. Must be reviewed. Typically, things have to be repeated about 8 times before people remember them. So I will have you all repeat the takeaway again.
The teacher is responsible to cause the student to learn.
You all are excellent students. I'm not sure if that was 8 times yet or not, but we're close. Present jingles or acronyms. For example, for distance, rate, and time, I tell my students, if you have the distance, you divide. And that's the only thing you have to know. You don't have to know everything else. Add a little bit of extra facts. For example, with the commas. We just had fun with that. You have to be careful how many commas you use. Otherwise, it doesn't mean the right thing. Drill the hard parts. Warn your students about pitfalls. Derek is going to do that, Lord willing, tomorrow. Is that right? Tell you about the holes in the road. Review the directions. Do you all understand the basic form of a presentation? I will warn you that when you ask your students at the end of the class, do you understand? Some of them will sit there and not. And they don't. They will go back to their desks, and the first thing that happens is, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. You just told me you did up here at the class table. Sorry, it doesn't happen. In talking with the woman at the well, Jesus several times said, I am He. He was repeating. And as a teacher, you're going to find yourself repeating yourself. So I'm going to repeat the takeaway one more time. The teacher is responsible to cause the student to learn. And sometimes you have to repeat it in a little bit different way. Sometimes you have to get very personal. You have to get close to someone. Let me see. We have to get personal with these people. Sometimes getting into their space and making them feel a little singled out is what it takes to get their attention. All right. I said we have to review, so we're going to review now. The bait is also called the introduction, and the purpose of it is to
get their attention.
The bite could also be called the explanation, and the purpose of it is to
keep their attention.
The catch could also be called is the
application,
and the purpose of it is to
direct
their attention. Very good. Restating what I had written there, but that's good. Thank you. And the takeaway. The
teacher is responsible to
thank you for your attention.